for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
Kiva.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with over 50 years of playing PlayStation, like 15 years in that games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation delays 18 seconds every single time. It comes out on Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. on podcast services and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
Look, I don't want to edit this bastard. I'd make it as easy as possible. So, like, I know the intro is going to be 18 seconds. I just wait 18 seconds. Then we start going. But if you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, the comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merch store. But I haven't really put anything new on there in quite a while. Max, we had a week off.
Did you? We didn't.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I've been.
No, we did. So we were meant to be record our episode for last week. However, I was across the other side of the state. I was up in the northern parts of Victoria in Echuca and Moama, which is across the border, for work. So I was like, we have a week off.
It was a great conversation. You're like, oh, do you want to record? I'm like, I don't mind. We can do it Sunday. It's not a big deal. And then you're like, look, maybe if I finish Split Fiction, we'll record. I'm like, look, as long as you tell me by 4 o'clock, I can be ready within hours. Like, it's not a big deal. He's like, okay. And then you message me Sunday morning going, finish Split Fiction. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to record tonight, aren't I? And then you're like, nah. So I just take the week off still, like, yeah, okay.
Well, mostly because, like, we'll get to Split Fiction soon, but, like, I wanted you to get more time in the game as well. Yeah. And, you know, it's always good to have a week off sometimes as well. It's not being a super busy time, like, for news. Games, though, absolutely. It's about to get a whole lot worse. But from a news perspective, it's been kind of fine. And, you know, like, obviously, I was about to go away for a week with work, and the night before, I was like, I kind of would like to just chill, because, so I, you know, very clearly neurodiverse. The people I was staying with were all neurotypical, all my colleagues. I'm like, this is going to be a draining week, and I don't want to, like, you know, be up late the night before doing all my things just to then go and be exhausted for a week. So I believe we made the right call. I enjoyed the week off. It feels longer, as it always does. But, you know, because even you messaged me the other day being like, yo, like, we haven't fucking talked games in like a week. This is crazy.
Yeah. The other thing was you were also at work and pretty flat out, and you were doing work things after work.
Yeah, for like 4 straight days of just work. So, like, I kind of didn't talk to anyone.
You kind of just fell off the face of the planet.
I did, yeah.
We were all, you know, because there's a group of us in our, obviously, group chat, and we were all just, like, we're all placing bets on, you know, release date of Switch, price of Switch, which I won. Suck it. and then we're like, oh, Ryan just doesn't want to play. What a dick.
Yeah, it's not around. And then I come in at like 10:30 p.m. like, yo, make a bunch of comments, and then I clearly passed out. So like, and then I'm dead for 2 days. Then no one hears from me.
Yeah.
But no, it was a good fun week away. Did take the portal with me. Played some MLB The Show while I was away, which was cool. The internet wasn't brand, so I got a lot of strikes. So I was like, I'm not going to stop playing MLB The Show, because I apparently, you know, input is quite important, it would seem. But Max, before we started the recording today, you're like, I have this thing rattling around in my brain. What do you got?
Yeah, I've heard a random song via a TikTok video. And then TikTok's now like, hey, you can just, you like me, you can just add me straight to your Spotify playlist. And I've listened to that song like 40, 50 odd times already today alone.
Mm.
I think I had a problem.
Yeah. But like, excuse me. For me, it's a relatable problem. I've had this happen to me numerous times. Particularly, there was a song by Willow, who is Will Smith's daughter. She did a song called Wait a Minute. And then it was a really quite slow song. It's like fine. But then it got TikTok-ed. And it got like, you know, up-pitched and sped up. And I'm like, this jams. And like, they've added, like, with the way they've mixed it, it's made the guitars all like sparkly and it's really kind of like punchy and like sits up here in like a feeling. And I really dig it. And like, I was same as you. Like, this song lives rent-free in my brain for like 2 weeks. And then I forgot about it. And then I got into a whole new song. But what it wasn't just a song. Like, you were giving me like dicks.
So the unfortunately the edit that I heard on TikTok was an 8D audio edit. So it pings back and forth and around and in and out, and it kind of just, it felt good.
Mm.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, gave you like downstairs?
Oh, well, maybe.
Yeah, no, music can do that, absolutely. You know, as I said, like, you know, in this last week,
I found it very relaxing, despite it being like essentially heavy drum and bass.
Yeah, it's EDM. A lot heavier than when you were explaining to me. I wasn't expecting so much. Like, I'm like, all right, cool. I suppose.
Whatever floats.
What was that?
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, sure, whatever, right? But like, I had the same thing about a week ago. So I know it's not new. Dua Lipa, pop star. Been around for a while. She keeps coming back into my rotations regularly with new songs, and I'm forever impressed. So she released a song like 4 years ago as part of her future nostalgia album called Levitating. I heard it for the first time, like properly, about a week ago. And I swear to God, my first response was like, this may be one of the best fucking pop songs I've ever heard in my entire life. And then I proceeded to tell anybody that would listen why I believe it's like one of the best songs ever made, especially in pop music. It's got like chant vocals. It's got that simple like clap, you know, stomp clap beat. It's got like a chorus that really kind of a bridge that kind of slows down and then peaks into the bridge. Lyrically it's kind of vague, but it's more of a vibe song if anything. And if pop song isn't fucking vibes, then what is it? It's got like this lovely a cappella sort of bit at the end. It's really punchy. It's really basic beat. But like, the bass line's funky as fuck. It's so good. Like, there's hints of Spice Girls and like Kylie Minogue and a little Gaga. Like, it's just dripping in influence. And it's fucking exceptional. So if anyone playing at home, go listen to Dua Lipa's Levitating. Preferably with DaBaby. Guess he's just some rapper. I watched the video clip and then I realized that Dua Lipa was really fucking hot.
I thought you were implying that everyone has to like listen to this music with their baby.
No, yeah. That, as I said, I was like, that's a, probably should clarify that the baby is the guest rapper on the song.
Like, do I really have to wake Ollie up for this? I don't think he'd
be happy. Okay, Ollie, Ryan has recommended that you need to listen to Levitating by Dua Lipa. I understand you're one and you have no idea what the fuck I just said to you. But this is some good pop music. So look, I feel ya. And I've listened to it like a god knows. It's immediately at the top of my like Spotify's repeat playlist. Like, hey, these are the songs that you listen to the most. I'm like, yeah, duh. So I get ya. I feel ya. I'm one with you, Max. And just add it to the other list of things that show that you're pretty neurodivergent.
Should fill out those forms, eh?
Yeah, you probably should fill out those forms, huh? Yeah.
Maybe I'll do them tomorrow so I can give them to my psych on Wednesday when I say it.
Oh, not a bad idea. Be like, hey, can I have meds now? Not a bad idea. But outside of that, like, yeah, I don't think really much went down over the last Switch 2 weeks. Switch 2 happened. Do you want to touch on that?
FromSoft announced Bloodborne 2 on the Switch.
But not really? Yeah. Switch 2, but not really? I didn't watch it because admittedly I'm not super keen on the Switch, but
no, I didn't expect like an hour and a half fucking presentation.
Oh, wow.
I sat down at work to watch it and I'm like, motherfucker, it's been an hour and a half.
So you very quickly had to like rush to get your shit done.
I have to like haul ass. I was in off their first game, which was Mario Kart World.
Yeah, that's the one thing that might get me.
I'm like, hello, Forza Horizon Mario Kart? Yes, please.
I did watch that trailer, because I'm like, what racetracks have they got? Any new karts? And there looks to be a bunch of new things.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
And then they're like, hey, wait, June 5th, get ready. I'm like, what?
It's really close.
Okay.
2 months.
Yep. Other than that, yeah.
Like, 2 months is normally, like, under a game circumstance, 2 months is rad. Like, oh, it's, you know, from essentially, like, release trailer to release, 2 months? Fuck yeah. For a console that's $700, kind of need more than 8 weeks to save if you were going to. Like, it's fucking rich. And that's presuming you were up at 3 a.m. and got your pre-order
well,
in.
Well, Nintendo's like, oh, pre-orders will start on the 9th. And then EB Games, like, right now.
Yeah, that's just for the US and their tariffs. Like, we're fucking boo. Like, we're good here in Oz. We got no time for tariffs. It's crazy. Fucking but what's this Bloodborne that's not Bloodborne? I haven't watched it.
So, essentially, it's a PvVP game?
PvEVP, okay, yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it was very Bloodborne aesthetic.
Like that middle-aged, gothic sort of old
English gothic, steampunkish. Mm-hmm. They were talking about hunters and the moon, and there was some touching and feeling of hands and arms.
Hot.
And I'm like, oh my god, this is Bloodborne 2. These motherfuckers have put it on Switch.
But like, why? Like, it kind of adds more questions, if anything. So if it is a spiritual successor to Bloodborne, why the fuck is there not a Bloodborne 2? Like, my presumption was it was always, FromSoft that were like, we don't want to touch it.
But I mean, Bloodborne is Sony's IP, and obviously this is also FromSoft's IP.
Mm-hmm.
They're self-publishing it in Japan, so Nintendo are just paying for that exclusivity. It's my understanding is now that Nintendo can somewhat compete, they're going to try and steal everyone else's ball.
Yeah, look, and as Mute in the chat points out, and this was something I was about to jump onto, was, yeah, that Sony owns the rights. And that's absolutely true. They own the rights to Bloodborne, so it's not going to go anywhere else. But why are they... Like, my theory was that Sony aren't dumb, and they'd be like, we need a sequel to Bloodborne, but FromSoft, like, we've got other shit to do, and, like, they won't do it without their blessing in the same way that we would assume that...
Rumored.
Yeah. And then, like, Housemarque did the Demon Souls remaster... Remake, sorry. So, like, Bluepoint. My apologies. Thank you. Bluepoint did the remake.
Dark Souls would be fucking wild, though.
Yeah, it'd be fucked, wouldn't it? But yeah. So, like, it's interesting, and I'll have to watch the trailer just to sort of correlate the two in my head and be like, oh, okay, cool. Because I did love Bloodborne. I just wasn't very good at it.
And then I completely forgot that Metroid 4 Prime got renamed as Metroid 4, it became Metroid 4 Prime or whatever it is, or Beyond. And I'm like, are these motherfuckers really announcing a new Metroid before Metroid 4 comes out? And I'm like, no, it's the same game.
Also, like, going, oh yeah, hey, like any console generation these days, you just get remakes and just ports. You want both the Zelda games? Bam, play as $20 extra. Suck dicks.
I mean, I would do it though, because it would actually run.
Oh, yeah, it might run better, but it's still going to be an empty fucking void of nothing.
Well, how dare you?
What?
I want to throw my breakable weapons at that empty void of nothing.
That's you're more than welcome to, and that'd be great.
New Donkey Kong looked all right. Yeah. Donkey Kong with, like, destructible terrain on a Switch was cool. I cannot believe they're charging for their Switch 2 tutorial game.
$6.
Should be fucking packaged in.
Like, Nintendo have really just cranked up the need for dollars, which is insane to me, because obviously Switch did incredibly well, and they certainly aren't lacking any money. So why have they...
Got to play for that Bloodborne.
Bloodborne. Yeah, like, all this has really done is give permission for Rockstar to be like, yeah, you want to pay $100 for GTA 6? Okay, let's go. What are you going to do? Like, are you willing to pay it for fucking Mario Kart? And you know what Mario Kart's going to have, Max? pretty much every fucking map from the previous one and three new ones, yeah, and they'll make you pay $80.
I want to point out that Take-Two could release GTA 6 online for free and still make hands over fist money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, oh, big time. I'm just saying, like, that they were, like, probably the first ones to really be okay with just doing that. Where, like, yeah. I don't think the only other people I would think of, which is still 2K, would be like, here's NBA 2K, it's this much, and you're going to have to suck it and pay for it, and they will.
Mm.
Like, I think Madden might be the only one, or Call of Duty, maybe. But, like, yeah, the only one that can really get away with these prices would be GTA. The Mulcho in the chat jumps in, resubscribes for a 24th month. Well, sweetheart. Empty Void of Nothing was my high school band name. We had emo covers of big band music. Oh, that's cool. Just emo covers of just big swing tunes. That'd be a blast. But yeah, look, as I said, like, it's the Switch is not in my immediate interest, which is disappointing, because like, I know my kid would love to play it, and I'm a sucker for new gear, but I have a Switch, and I had one since launch, and I enjoyed it when we were covering Nintendo stuff, and then very quickly it became underpowered, and I had lost interest.
Well, see, I sold my Switch a couple of months ago, and now that my daughter's, like, into gaming, I'm like, she's like, can I play Mario? I'm like, no, I don't have a fucking Switch anymore.
Mm.
She's like, can we get one? I'm like, maybe.
Yeah, in, like, 2 months. Like, how quickly can you save $800, Hadley?
Oh, she's, yeah. So I think we're going to do it as a Christmas gift. Assuming they're still, you know, available. Then,
oh, but what, are you just gonna play it between June and like December or what?
No.
Just put it in the cupboard.
I won't get one in June.
Oh, okay, good. I'm like, fuck, you're keen.
I do not have the fucking willpower.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I know you, dude, and like, you will fuck with that Switch to me, and I would make you because I'd want to know about it.
depends on if Telstra are doing them. If Telstra are doing them at launch, I might just do it.
Shameless. I love it.
Because it'll be like $32 a month.
That seems like a lot, but also it's not really.
Well, it's whatever the cost is divided by 3 years.
Yeah. Which I'm saying, that's actually like, it's one of those things I said, like, it sounds gnarly, but it's much better than paying $800.
Was it 700 divided by 36? That can't be right.
What'd you get?
$19.
Wow! I'd fucking do, that's cheaper than Netflix.
Maybe it'll be 2 years. That's $29.
Yeah, that's probably
for 1 year. 1 year is $58. So yeah, it'd be about $50.
Yeah.
And it'll probably come with Switch Online too.
Or like, maybe it'll come with the fucking $6 packing game. Crazy. All right, well, let's get into the section we call games we've been playing.
Enough about Nintendo.
Let's talk about the games that we have been playing. Max, where do you want to go with this? Because like, the games we're going to talk about today was Bury the Lead. Obviously, Midnight Murder Club, Split Fiction, Assassin's Creed. I've played Schedule 1 as well as Cinemaster, Cinema Simulator. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to start?
You've played more than me, so you start. You go however you want to go.
Beautiful. All right. Well, let's kick things off with Split Fiction, as I write down the notes. So, look, as we discussed before, big thank you to the team over at EA Australia for providing Max and I a review copy of Split Fiction that's allowed us to play it over the last couple of weeks. As I mentioned 2 weeks ago, I have been playing with my son. Oh, and also Max has not finished the title yet. So he is going to be essentially ensuring that I don't speak any spoilers. So if there's anything that I say that does hit the line of spoilers, he's going to be like, yo, and then I'm going to have to pull back real quick. So I'll do my very best.
Ah, very nice.
And also, big thank you for Rated Type R for resubscribing with Prime. This has been that they've been subscribed for 38 months. Holy shit. Dude, thank you. Thank you so much. But yeah, Split Fiction, so we provide a review code. But yeah, I've been playing with my son. Max, you've been playing with your wife. Over, not this weekend that just came, the one before, my son and I did roll credits. I believe, or at least according to the game screen, it was 25-ish hours, but that also includes the 3 to 4 hours that I played with my partner Phoebe before we swapped over for James. Now, to ensure that I don't sort of like get anything I shouldn't, Max, how's your experience going with it so far as someone that is close to the end, but not quite, and then I'll add my thoughts on top of yours.
So according to my game clock, I'm sitting at about 12 to 13 hours,
mm-hmm.
which seems wild because it doesn't feel like I've played that long. I'm still loving it. We are now fairly far through, I think. We've done like 6-7 odd side stories that have been fucking wildly different to each other. The one we did, I think it was just last night, is best described as Candyland meets Fall Guys, and then all of a sudden turned into this fucking horrific. Oh, we yes. had, because Hadley's been bugging his face. She's like, can I watch you guys play? So, just over beside me here for those watching, I've pulled out a couch. So we set Hadley up with a blanket, some pillows, bowl of popcorn, and she was just watching us play. And then she's like, oh, this is scary. it's still, in my opinion, more difficult than It Takes Two. Mm-hmm. I'm finding that Ellie's having a lot more difficulty this time around than she did last time. It's a lot more interactive this time around. There's a lot more moving pieces. There's a lot more hand-eye coordination needed. There's a lot more shooting involved. Mm. A lot of the puzzles, although, are fairly, once you recognize them, are fairly straightforward. But if you lack the dexterous ability to do so, they can be quite challenging. But a lot of the, it's important that you don't skip those side stories, because I think that's where the characters mesh the most, and then they open up to each other the most in that side story content, because it's those odd, you know, these are the stories that mean the most to us but never really went anywhere. They never, you know, they never came to fruition. They're kind of just little set pieces. But as you mentioned, as we've been talking about it, the story was its weakest point at the beginning, and now coming to the end, they are now, you know, the two characters, Mio and
Zoe,
you know, they're forming those bonds. They're getting to know each other. They're understanding why their writing's the way it is, how their stories are evolving, why things are happening the way they are. And they're becoming, you know, that it's not as forced as it originally felt.
Mm.
So that's good.
Yeah, look, to bounce off a lot of what you said there. So, but yeah, 2 weeks ago when I gave my initial impressions to Split Fiction, I have changed a lot of my thoughts. So one of the things I highlighted was I felt that both the characters were quite shallow, and I didn't feel that their relationship was very sort of like conducive towards the game. Like, I didn't find it very intriguing or very engaging. Pardon me. But my original belief was that decision was made to demonstrate like the dichotomy between the two, in that, you know, Mio is super like brash and harsh and sort of standoffish, you know, one end of the spectrum, where Zoe was, you know, really polite and really kind and sort of on the other end of said spectrum. As you play along, you start to realize that both of these individuals are that way because of experiences that they've had, and they are both fronting in a lot of ways. They are both masking. So as we proceed, as we play along the game, and we start seeing, you know, we start breaking down those masks, and they become more open to share with one another and engage a lot more emotionally outside of just experiencing these interactive worlds together. That's where the game really altered for me, so much so that there's a story beat later on that like had me like weeping on the couch a little bit, just because there were some beats that were really, really quite emotionally intense.
Was it the octopus?
Yes. Yes.
The cephalopod.
Yes. That was one. That was one of them. I picked up what that mission was about early on, and I was like, "Oh no!" So as a result, like I had this like unease in me for the rest of that mission, like knowing when that beat was going to come. I had a feeling of where it was going, and like it's going to hit me when it gets there. Yeah, it got me.
I'm assuming it's going to do the same at the end of the level that I'm up to, where you discover about Zoe's sister.
Mm-hmm.
We're raised.
Yeah, that was brutal. Just saying. But yeah, so like that was really intriguing, and I liked I'm very glad to be eating my words on what I said about my first experience with the title. By extension, though, the villain sucks. Like there is nothing to him that is it is interesting or intriguing or that shows any of his motivations outside of, ooh, I have a machine that does things and I'm a bad guy, bad businessman. And it's just...
It's just Bobby Kotick.
He's just representative of like tech and AI bros. That's kind of what they're going for, and I get it. But once again, like with him being the key, like granted, outside of the motivations of to get out of said alternate realities, the motivation should be to stop that guy, and that doesn't exist. So like, it's just doing things for the sake of doing things, because like, at the end it's expected, big bad is him. You're going to find a way to fight him in the end. It's what happens. He's set up as a villain the entire way through. It is really not uneventful, because it's quite an exciting sort of back end of the game. But like, when you beat him, you're like, ooh, good for them, I guess, because he's a bad man, I suppose. So that's a shame, but you're on the money. Like, the one of the key parts of this game, and it's so insane that they're side stories, are the side stories. Like, they are brilliant. What this game does, and I think this is a lot of... I'm making a complete assumption here. I feel like with Split Fiction, like Haze Light and the writing team were sitting in a room and going, what's some ideas we've got for a game or for a level that like would make no sense because we can't really flesh it out into an entire game. But like, what's a cool little idea you've got? And that's where you get the ideas of like, oh, what if I was like a pig and then I became a sausage and then I got cooked in the end, and this is how a kid would understand how sausages are made? In the same way that the Candyland level, as you were saying, like you're playing Little Teeth, and it's essentially how a kid would interpret the dentist. Mm. So like those similes, like all those little analogies for those experiences was really, really cool to experience it that way. And as the characters are explaining a lot of it while you're traveling through said side story, it does really flesh out and build on the characters and makes a really engaging experience for that. I would agree with you that from an actual gameplay setup, it is noticeably harder. I'm lucky that my son has been playing, like he's 8. He's been playing games since he was like 4. So he has the dexterity to back it up. Now, there were times where we did have to, stick it out for a little while at one puzzle, or we would swap controllers. He may have been allocated a tougher puzzle as Mio, where I was given the easier option as Zoe, so we switched so I can get that done, then we would switch back. But yeah, so like in terms of the actual gameplay, I did find it more difficult, only comparatively. Like there was never a point where I'm like, I can't, it's not like Blood, it's not Soulsborne, right? It's not like you're about to get your shit kicked in any minute. It's like, it's just... Especially like timing based puzzles, like there's a side story where you have this little bomb and you've got to like pass to one another and to get to the end of the mission while still passing it to get it into like a container. So it's essentially like a sports game. That was quite frustrating, especially playing with an 8-year-old.
There's a trophy for that side story of completing it without the bomb ever exploding.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't know. Like unless you'd had to have done it before, you could never get that in the first go. It's insane. So yeah, that was really fun. And the beauty of the game is there's no fail states, there's no lives. So like if you are playing with someone that is younger, like my son, or someone that may not have the that next level gaming ability, say like your wife, you can close that gap pretty quickly. You know, just as myself, as long as you're both not dead, one of you can keep progressing and the other person can just like jump in and keep up, which is brilliant. But the back act of this game. Now, I had seen and heard reviews of Split Fiction, and they all of them talked about like sort of the final act or the final set of sequences and how it's ridiculous. It absolutely is. Because I always remember listening to these reviews going, what are they... whatever they're talking about cannot be as miraculous or as insane as a concept than what they're saying. I can't see it. I don't see it happening. And then I get there and I'm like, wow, this is actually really incredible in terms of how they've done it. I like looking at it and like, I'm not a game developer, so I have to be assuming. I can kind of see how they would do it, but in application, it is very impressive on how they've done it. Think like Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, Max, but cranked up an extra level.
I think I've been spoiled for this. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So look, for those playing at home, we're not going to spoil on it, but there are moments where I'm like, how are they doing this? This is utterly insane, but a really cool and unique experience. I thought it was fantastic. Overall, like I talked about last week, about my overall thoughts of Split Fiction, being like, it's fine. I like it. I can't see where the scores are coming from. No, I can absolutely see where the scores are coming from. It is no doubt going to be a Game of the Year consideration. Even from a technical standpoint, I think that will see a lot of its larger impact. But will it be good Game of the Year? I don't know. I think it will get a lot of, like, obviously it's critical reception for those that are in the games industry. I think, what's the one that's more dev related? DICE Awards? It'll sweep the DICE Awards unless something amazing happens towards later in the year. But
did you and James do the Laser Hell secret level?
No, because I forgot about it. And there's no way he would have done it. Like, he would have been insane.
He's like, there's no way.
No chance. No fucking chance. Fair enough. But look, from where I am sitting, I cannot recommend Split Fiction hard enough. Is that it's difficult enough to be enticing for someone like you and myself, Max, who are more seasoned gamers, who have, you know, played the ins and outs of everything and just know how to read a level. But it's also built in such a way that supports those that are new. And when it's you buy one and you get a free copy to go to your mate, well, essentially, they still have to play with you.
And considering the fact that you play in split screen the entire time, regardless of whether you're doing couch co-op or not, you can physically, like, this is what you're looking at. This is what you need to do. I can see your screen. I can help you.
Yep.
You know, we can work this out together type thing. It's a very fantastic way to play, learn, and teach video games.
Absolutely. And, with that, because they, you know, as part of the latter story beats, like, they are quite emotionally intense. They are quite adult. And being able to have that conversation with my son to be like, well, you know, this is what this means and this is the impact of that and blah, blah, blah. And, like, that was, you know, a difficult conversation, but it was fun to be able to you know, once again, use the art form of media, of games as a media delivery system, I guess, fucking what I'm looking for. You know, it's a great way for me to have those conversations with my son, so... Big thank you once again to team over at EA and to the team at Hazelight. Man, you guys nailed it. Like, it's kind of insane that they have gone back-to-back brilliant games. Like, you know, No Way Out was pretty sweet, but they have certainly, like, improved on every step along the way. It's fantastic. Max, what about yourself? What's a game that you've spent some time with this week?
Oh, Assassin's Creed has taken over my life. Oh, so, yeah. Last time I spoke about it, I think I said I was about 1 to 2 hours in.
Yeah, well, I've not touched it at all since. So
I'm now about like 15 to 18 hours in.
Oh.
I feel like I have done nothing. Story-wise, I've done very little. So what I like to do in Assassin's Creed games is go, I think I explained this last week, I kind of go and explore the map I don't give a shit that they're level locked. I'll go in, I'll sneak, I'll play that assassin role. I'll go hit all the assassin towers, all the synchronization towers, because you can use them as fast travel points. Eventually, the game does allow you to purchase using in-game gold fast travel points to all the cities.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that yet because I don't have any gold. And I've just been exploring, and the game kind of rewards you for doing. I have so much legendary gear from just finding random legendary chests out in the wild. It's great. My gear's awesome. So it uses a gear level system like the last few Assassin's Creed games does. And I have just done enough of the story to unlock. I found myself a blacksmith who will come to my hideout and like work with me, because he has also been wronged by the people who have wronged me, and we're all going to band together and fuck up those who.
Yeah, that's on the because that sounds like you're playing a lot more Narwe, yeah.
I've only played Narwe so far.
Interesting.
Only played Narwe. And so I can now scrap all my old pieces of gear that I'm not using, and I can upgrade my gear to the level that I am, meaning I can do more damage with them and all of that stuff. The combat is tight in this game. It is more fun than I have memory of an Assassin's Creed game. I think maybe Odyssey, which would make sense because Odyssey is also Ubi Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just getting lost in the world. Like, there's just so much to go and look at. Just the various shrines. One of the collectibles of the side content that you can do is you can go and draw animals for XP. So I've been going and doing those. It's essentially like taking like the snapshots of of critters. Everything you do rewards you with XP or gear or some form of reward, so you never ever feel like you've wasted your time by going and checking out that question mark on your map or anything like that. Doing the castle raids and you know, beating the samurais in the castles to go and claim their loot and free the prisoners, and they've done such a fantastic job in just the moment-to-moment gameplay. I don't feel as overwhelmed as I feel like I should be when you open the mission page and it's like, you've got 15 people to hunt down. Here's all their submissions. Here's these people you can go
deal with. And don't dare open the map because you're about to get blinded with little markers.
Here's some shit over here that you can look at. Here's some people over here that you can look at, because every person you meet will have their own story to tell and how they're going to help your cause. And then obviously you've also got, I completely just lost his name. The other character you play as, Yasuke.
Yasuke, yeah.
He's got his own tree of people to deal with and all of his stuff. And it is a bit daunting. So I'm just going around playing, doing my own thing, slaying people out. And I've barely touched the surface of the story. Essentially, there's a group of, I want to say about 10 to 12 people. I've killed two of them so far. You do it in very quick succession at the side of the game. They're kind of like the tutorial areas. And then it's like, here, you can build a base. I'm like, ooh, base building. That is not my forte. I'm like, I'll build
the things. I did enjoy that in Valhalla, though.
I'm like, I'll build the things that I need to build that will benefit me, but like, they're like, oh, if you move it a bit closer, it'll be connected to the main building. I'm like, I don't want this connected to the main building. It doesn't make sense. Why the fuck would I have a forge connected to my main building? And then I realized that I put it way too far away and I have to actually get on my horse to ride over to the fucking forge. Sorry. Yeah, I might have to fix that. But it's just been so much fun. It really has been. I think this, I can understand how this has reach the player count that it has.
Mm-hmm.
I think this kind of is a return to form that Ubisoft needed, especially for like their tentpole franchise of Assassin's Creed. It makes me want to say, just don't do the yearly Assassin's Creed. Just wait until Ubi Montreal is ready for the next one.
Well, we discussed this at, I believe it was after Odyssey. It may not have been you, but it may have been with Josh.
I think it was Origins that took the break.
Yeah, there was a break into Origins, and then there was a break again at some point. I was like, yeah, why aren't they just doing this more often. And then Valhalla, and then like, guess what? We're going to release a stack of them. And then thankfully there was still a gap between Valhalla and Shadows. Now, Max, do you think that your, I'm using this word because it makes me, it's a fun word to say, your predilection to Japanese culture works in your favor, like works in the favor of making it a better game?
It is definitely probably
because it's one of the things that immediately turns me off when I boot it up.
It was probably making me, if it was in an area that was probably less, I cared less about, I would probably be golden pathing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying going and seeing the vistas. I'm enjoying going and seeing these shrines. I'm enjoying going and seeing these places because, I do have an interest in that. Like, I did the same for a little while in Valhalla. I didn't so much in Odyssey. I kind of golden pathed Odyssey. Same with Origins. I had no real interest exploring. Now, granted, Origins was just fucking desert for days. Whereas this has interesting things to go and look at and different biomes and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, possibly.
Mm. Interesting.
But like the moment-to-moment gameplay, like the actual, like the stealth is better, actually fighting enemies is better, the range of weapons you have available to you like changes up how combat works, the use of active skills changes the way you tackle things. At the moment, my build for Nawe, I have a set of gear and I just use shinobi tools. I just hide on rooftops and I throw fucking daggers at people. Nice. I very rarely fight unless I have to.
Well, you are an assassin, right? Like, it's kind of how you should be playing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not using the hidden blade to, like, assassinate. I literally just throw ninja stars at people from across the map. And then if they spot me, I throw a smoke bomb and run away.
Come back later. Well, it does align with your, like, more roguish tendencies when you play games, so...
Whereas, like, in the initial part where you get to play for, like, 10 seconds as Yasuke, I can just sprint at them and just run into them and just push them over and stab them on the ground. Cool, that's what I'm going to do. It was, like, the equivalent of going from, like, a rogue to a barbarian.
Yeah, it does feel that way. That's actually just a great way to explain it. It's exactly what it feels like. I have a bit of fun for us around Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
So this week, actually last week, I was listening to friends of the show, NextPlay.au. Go check them out. They're a great up-and-coming local games media site with Brad and the crew. In their weekly show, which you can listen on Spotify and podcast services of choice, they set up a fun little game for themselves. And I want to see how we can go. Mostly because you care a lot more about Assassin's Creed than I do. And that'll make it fun. Do you have a pen and paper in front of you?
No, but I have a Word document and a keyboard.
Sounds good. Can you please open one up?
Yep.
And make a 14 by 2 table.
Oh, fucking Jesus. Yeah, okay.
Or a 14 by 3. If you, no, 14 by 2. So... Now, for those that are watching live here on twitch.tv/thepopculturist or that are listening at home, play this game with us. Max, there are 14 Assassin's Creed games that have been released. We need to rank them in order of their Metacritic score.
Oh, okay. Be fucking terrible.
That's why I thought it'd be fun, because like I have an idea of what I think is at the top and what I think is at the back, but the middle is going to be all fucked. And I thought that would be, this is where like your knowledge would come in at play, and I could sort of like try take some objectiveness from it, try remember. So, Mute in the chat asks, are you counting the handhelds, right? No, I am not. Max, I will send you the list.
Okay.
In case you need it. But the list of games are as follows. Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Revelations 3, Black Flag, Rogue, Unity, Syndicate, Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla, Mirage, and Shadows. These are collectively period 1, 2, and 3, and are not considered part of the spin-offs. So, Max, let's talk it out. Let's see how this goes. Now, my immediate assumption would be that something like Unity or Syndicate were kind of towards the back. Because was it Unity was the multiplayer one where the faces were all rooted?
Unity was fucking terrible.
So, yeah, I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to put Unity at number 14 for my list personally.
Okay.
Now, I remember...
Are they listening at 14 to 1? Or
oh, I just went 4? I just went 1 to 14, and then I'm just going to write them as I go.
Okay, so I'm with you with Unity on the bottom.
Now, have you played many, if not all of these?
I have played... I haven't played Revelations.
Okay.
I haven't played Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Okay, cool.
Two of them that I haven't played.
All right, well, let's change your plans. Let's go from first release till last, because then it kind of forces us just to kind of act impulsively and go, I think it's a 7, you know, right? The original Assassin's Creed. Now, I remember this game doing well and being fine. I personally didn't really sing to it as much as I think 2 was certainly better. So I would put 2 in probably like the top 3. But the original Assassin's Creed, I'm going to put at like 5 or 6. Where would you put it and why?
It's at 5 for me.
Yeah? Okay, well, that's kind of where I was going to put it. So just a variety, I'll make it in 6. What's your logic on that?
It was good, but not great.
Okay.
There are others that are better, but it's definitely not as worse as some of the fucking later ones.
Yeah, yeah. Assassin's Creed 2. Now, Assassin's Creed 2 was, from all accounts, was utterly adored. Major improvement. People loved it compared to the first. Obviously, a lot more things were to come. I remember it being pretty up there. I'm thinking late 80s in my head from a Metacritic score. I want to put it in the top 4.
You know what? I've having looked at this list and realizing what's going on, Ask Creed 1 is getting moved.
Where is it now?
It's now 6, 7, 8, 9.
No, wow, big drop. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to put Assassin's Creed 2 in the top 3. I'll put it 3rd. Where would you put AC2 on your list, Max?
AC2 is number 2.
Hey, okay, your reasoning?
Ezio is the boy.
Yeah, everyone does. Everyone has a soft spot for Ezio.
What would you put?
I put it 3rd. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. Now, from Brotherhood and Revelations were kind of spin-offs, like what would have been like story spin-offs of 2, but they then kind of fleshed them into their own games. So what was from memory? Brotherhood or Revelations would be better. Oh shit! I'm gonna have to move Assassin's Creed down as well.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm gonna put in 6th. I'm gonna put Revelations.
You know what? I really don't need to write yours down because you're writing your own down.
Yeah. And Brotherhood, I think, is in a similar boat. So I'm gonna make that 5th. Where have you put Brotherhood and Revelations?
Brotherhood is 4.
Mm-hmm.
Rev is 6.
Interesting. All right. That puts Assassin's Creed 3. Get in there, Max. Give me that pitch.
Assassin's Creed 3 is number 5 after Brotherhood. Playing as a Templar was cool.
Yeah, I distinctly remember like the Civil War energy of it all was really fun.
Hang on, fucked up. Revelations and Ask Creed 3 are both being moved down a slot to 6 and 7 because my boy Black Flag's better than 3 and Revelations. Shit. Rev is fucking terrible. 3. I'm just going to fill them all in now.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to tell you what my list is.
Well, then in that case, I'll talk mine out. All right. So Assassin's Creed 3, I've put at 9. Black Flag, I know, was pretty popular. I'm going to put it at 2. Rogue, I can't speak to, but I imagine it's not like super rad. So I'm going to put it, I don't know, fucking there. Number 12. 13, I'll put Syndicate. So this puts us in, into period 2. So I have spots 1, 7, 8, 11. Now, Odyssey... No, I'm going to have to move them down. Brotherhood is now 6. Revelations is now 8. Which puts... What would be number 1? I'm going to put Shadows at number 1. It's doing well. I don't think it's number 1, but I'll put it there for funsies. 4 will be... People liked Odyssey quite a bit. 5 will be Valhalla. And then Origins. And then Mirage, I remember, didn't do very well, so I'm going to put that at 11. All right, here is my list as follows in reverse order. So 14 to number 1. 14, Unity. 13, Syndicate. 12, Rogue. 12, 11, Mirage. 10, Original AC. 9, AC3. Number 8, Revelations. Number 7, Brotherhood. Number 6, Origins. Number 5, Valhalla. Number 4, Odyssey. Number 3, Assassin's Creed 2. Number 2, Black Flag. And number 1, Shadows. I am not confident with that at all.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, what's yours and why? Because like, also, you know Assassin's Creed more than me. This is more of an experiment and fun game for you.
Unity, Rogue. Syndicate. Miragi, Revelations 1, Valhalla, Origins 3, Black Flag, Brotherhood, Assassin's Creed 2, Shadows, Odyssey.
Nice. All right. Now, if you want to, like...
And I think
Okay, well, I'm already immediately wrong. All right, you ready?
Sure.
Now, I don't have these in ranked order, unless you want to, like, jot these down.
I was going to say, do you have a predetermined list? Did they just, like...
No, because I didn't look, because I didn't, like, I didn't listen to the rest of the episode. I didn't look at the list, because I didn't want to spoils, right? Okay. All right, so, Assassin's Creed 1 came in with an 81 on Metacritic. So, way, way off where I thought it was, because I put that at number 10. And according to this list, if I'm just going down, we can switch to Metascore. Here we go. All right. So at number 1 would be Assassin's Creed 2 with 90.
Okay. So I had that listed as...
I had it third. Number 2 was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood with 89. I had that at 7, so that was wrong.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, however... At number 3 with 88. Nice. Tick on that bad boy. Hello. Got that wrong. Number 4 was Assassin's Creed 3 with 84. That's way higher than I expected. Odyssey comes in at 5th with 83.
Yep.
Assassin's Creed 1 comes in at 6th with 81.
Yep.
Yeah, but is also tied with Assassin's Creed Origins at 81.
Yep.
And Assassin's Creed Shadows at 81.
Mm-hmm.
Assassin's Creed Revelations 80. Mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed Valhalla 80.
Yep.
Syndicate 76. Mirage 76. And I'm apparently going to keep rolling, I suppose. Oh, there's Ezio collection. Oh my God, it's below like the collections and shit. Unity, 72. But Rogue, also with a 72. And then it got remastered to PS4 and lost the point.
Yeah, so my 14, 13, 12 were like spot on.
Yeah. Mine were a little jerked around, but I got one.
And then I would argue that my 10 was correct as well because it had the same score. Holy shit. So I got about half right.
Beautiful. Like, look, so for me, I got one. The reason I like this as an idea is because in like even when I booted up Assassin's Creed Shadows and it showed me that opening cinematic, and it's like, this looks like Marvel. And then I realized that these are all games of the fucking same. And judging by how densely packed their Metacritic scores are, these games are all the same. But it was a fun experiment nonetheless. Did you learn a little bit more about Assassin's Creed in your thought process?
I learned that 2's a lot more popular than I thought it was.
Me too.
I mean, I knew it was popular, but for it to take 1 and 2.
I didn't realize there'd be so many with similar scores, identical scores.
And we all knew that fucking Unity was universally hated and a piece of shit.
That's pretty bad. When I had to go to the second page of like Assassin's Creed in Metacritic to get the last three, I'm like, it's not very well. It's not done very well. Yeah. But look, that was a fun little idea. I hope you enjoyed it at home. It was, like I said, it was something. I thought, why not? Steal a good idea from another show. Why not?
Support. So, I'll stick to my thematic gameplay of Japanese games.
Oh, yeah?
I went back and played the Raid, the Tales of Io for Ghost of Tsushima with some friends.
Ah.
About a month ago, Ghost of Tsushima was on sale, and we convinced one of our mates to buy it. We're like, hey, come play the Raid with us. It's really fun. You'll love it. We'll level you up. We'll gear you up. We'll do it. So it's three parts to the Raid. Part one is like combat and puzzles. Part two is combat puzzles. Part three is just the final boss.
Mm-hmm.
Part one took us 45 minutes.
Nice.
Sweet. Love it. Part two took us 2 hours and 45 minutes and was the biggest fucking chuckle fest I've ever had in my life. My ribs hurt by the end of it. Because we were fucking pissing ourselves laughing so much. And the final part three took us 9 minutes.
So not well spread out.
So what killed us the most in part two, so similar to when you're playing the multiplayer missions, if you've played them, you get different elements that you have to like, that will allow you to see invisible platforms and only your color, so be it blue, green, or orange, you can only see your own platform.
Mm-hmm.
So, but once you've taken those symbols, you can only hold one, so it's for a group of four. So three people have these symbols and one person can see what the symbols are, but we can create the platforms by jumping into the empty space of where it is.
Okay.
So we have to rely on the one person to be like, hey, moon's up next. Then it's sun, then it's lightning, then it's sun, then it's sun, and so on and so forth. So our shot caller was Dick. We had Cass as our shot caller.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So basically he would tell us all in one go, and we just had to fucking remember it. So if we died, he's like, I've already told you what it is.
Does he understand the benefit is that you fucking get it done?
There were so many times because we wanted to just get through it. We would make dumb mistakes. So, for instance, in the first part, to start forming the platforms, two people have to shoot their spiritual bows and hit a target. So we'd all sprint from the respawn point. We'd fucking whip out our bows as quickly as possible, try and quickscope the thing, and then we'd just start running, whether we hit it or not. We'd be like, there's four of us, only two need to hit. Two people will definitely hit it. And then no one hits it, and one of us just fucking jumps over into the ledge because there's no fucking ledge there. And then we're back to the start, and we're doing it again.
Okay, I can see how that would be very fun, yeah.
Two hours of just fucking non-stop chuckling, pissing ourselves laughing. Hilarious. Now, three of us had done the Raid before. Like, we knew what we were doing, and we're teaching the fourth. And, like, it was so funny. So, my role, I played the character class of the Ronin, who is essentially the healer. By the end of it, I had like 70 something revives. Because my ultimate ability is I just, if anyone is down, I can just revive them from wherever they are. Mm. So that was my job. I literally just had to hold my super essentially until they all inevitably failed, and then I'd bring everyone back to life. It was So the game is so much fun. If you haven't played Tales of Eo, I strongly suggest finding a group of people to do it with. If you don't have a group of people to do it with, I can provide you three absolute chuckle fucks to come and do it with. I'll come and do it with you. Hit me up. I love it so much. I'll do it. I would love to try and like convince you and Paige and Joel to come and do it with me, and we'll stream it one night.
Well, I've not done like would I have to do all the other shit to do it?
Yeah, you kind of do, because you have to be gear level 100.
Oh, lame. Then I'm out. Because like I've never touched Shadows at all.
Like, you've got to level up a little bit.
Not Shadows. What was fucking Ghost of Tsushima raid?
Rivals.
Rivals, thank you.
It's so much fun, though.
Yeah. Look, I'm with you. And look, in the same way that, like, would...
It's Legends, not Legends, Rivals.
Thank you.
look,
in the same way that you would like to pull me over there to, you know, mess about in that, I would like to pull you to a game that I played the last couple of days and that I've had a similar like chuckle fest. It is called Schedule One. So this game is like out of the blue, just gone off. It's the new hotness. It is at its core drug dealer simulator with a more cartoonish art style. Very reminiscent of was it Squanch Games? That did, was it Trevor Saves the Universe? That High VR game? Was that?
They did High on Life as well.
They did High on Life, but High on Life had its, like, it's more looks like the other one. The other one. So, like, you're weirdly proportioned. You're all kind of lanky and tubey. Got this big honking head, and you can customize how you look. So, you can make. So, I've been playing with Craig, good friend of the show, Mullet Show. He made this guy who's just wearing pants. I think he has shoes on. Shirt off, nips out, balding, stone to the eyeballs, green, just a little smirk on his face. It's fantastic. I just made me because I thought that'd be funny. It takes all of the things that I loved, because you remember back in the day, Max, when I really fell in love with Drug Dealer Simulator and I was playing it like twice a day, every day. It hits me in the same thing. So it's Drug Dealer Simulator 2 released, you know, towards the back end of last year, and it was really good, and they brought in multiplayer, but in doing so, by going from 1 to 2, they took a lot of the simplicities of 1, added to it, and made it a bit more complicated, so, you know, as in the progression of the game, while also adding multiplayer. What Schedule 1 does, it has the simplicity with multiplayer. So it's in a relatively small map. Everything's really straightforward. The day structure is identical in terms of there's a curfew in the evening. You can still go out and do your deals and whichever in the night. However, the police presence is higher and there's a lot of risks that come with that. But as you play throughout the day, you can still do all your trades, whatever. In the game is where we are so far. Like, we have the option to make methamphetamine. However, currently we are only still hanging out in the weed side of life. We have started in a motel room. We've then moved to a unit above a Chinese restaurant. And now we're in a bungalow in the suburbs. And we're building up our drug organization, which is just called Drugs, ? So what's the name of the corporation? Drugs? So Craig and I played for like numerous hours at this point. We very quickly fell into our roles, which align with who we are. Craig stays back.
Craig's the muscle.
He's the grower. He stays at the place, grows all the weed, makes it exceptional. I'm the runner. So I take advantage of my ADHD and like my inability to stay still. And I'm just running across the map, dealing drugs, blah, 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 coming back, doing whatever. He's growing. I come, make new baggies, skadoodle, keep going. It's a great team dynamic. It's really, really fun. And we're kicking a whole bunch of ass because of it. However, one thing that I find really interesting is how I play this compared to, say, Drug Dealer Simulator, in that because Drug Dealer Simulator is a lot more realistically in its design choice, and also it's, in some ways, it's gameplay mechanics. So all the products at which you make and sell do have an addictiveness level within both games. However, in Drug Dealer Simulator if your products become too addictive and the individual overdoses and or dies. That does negatively impact you and your organization, your reputation, etc. As of right now, in Schedule 1, there is no like death ramifications. There's no major concerns if a customer was to get addicted. So in Drug Dealer Simulator, I would actively not make products that would be too addictive to not get people too hooked so that I'm not killing them. It's just enough to like keep them coming back but not taking over their brains. But in Schedule 1, there's no ramifications. So I am just running whatever is the most addictive. You have your four base strains. They are OG Kush, Sour Diesel, Granddaddy Purple, and Green Crack. But the fun part in this game, Max, there's a mixing station. And you can go and buy any product from the service station, the hardware store, like, you know, the vending machine outside your Chinese restaurant. And you can combine them with your weeds to make a more addictive and more like change the flavor profiles. So here I am just like putting, you know, a bunch of shit together. So I put Granddaddy Purple and some Viagra tablets together. We made this new strain called Granddaddy Boner, and it has an addictiveness of like 85%. Like, sweet. Brilliant. Love it. Then I got Sour Diesel and I mixed it with Viagra as well, because we had a lot of Viagra. We made, now granted, the names that are coming up, these are all generated by the game. So we put Sour Diesel and Viagra together. We get something Thunderfuck. I forget what it was called. It's what the game recommended. And then we got one. We put like a donut and OG Kush together, like a Red Bull and a Green Crack. And like, it just makes a whole bunch of interesting combinations. And of course, they all have the different flavor profiles. There's something better way to explain it. But in doing so, you as your character within the game can try the weed that you make. And then it alters how you play. So if you had one that's like cut with Red Bull, you are pinging. And like, your mouse sensitivity jacks. You move faster. And everything like vibrates and you just fucking move around. But if you were to have one with a more sedating effect, your mouse sensitivity plummets. Everything is slow. All the sound effects have this weird echo to them and everything gets so. And there's one where like a trait is slippery and it just removes your grip. So like, you can be walking and like, you know, if you press W to walk, you let go, your character stops, but they keep going. It's like all these little details that are just kind of fun. Outside of my own enjoyment of playing games that are simulator games or particular management games, which I think is probably a more accurate way to explain the games that I enjoy, this is absolutely that. Like, if you were to tell someone, hey, do you want to play a game that's all about time and people management, but it's also math? I'd be like, no, are you fucking kidding? Why would I want to play that? If you're like, you want to play a game where you're a drug dealer and you got to like write your own weed and then ship it and, you know, do all that. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, absolutely I do.
So is there any, having not played, is there any downside? Like, can you get jacked by rival dealers?
As of yet, I've not seen any rival dealers. Police will jack you up though.
As I say, are they popo? Will they come in and steal your product? Will they confiscate it?
Absolutely popo. They will not break into your safe houses, but they will chase you to your safe house and they will stay out the front and for quite a while. But if you, like, they can frisk you at any point and you can conceal things within your inventory. It's like a little mini game in and of itself, but It's quite quick. And like, say if you have a bar of eight things, like the police will kind of like scan across it left and right. And as they cross it, you can click on it, which will obscure it or conceal it. But if you have like four baggies in a row, you're not going to be fast enough to get all four of them. So you aren't going to get pinned. So you kind of makes you consider how much you carry, how you spread out your inventory. But yeah, they like they will find you if they see you deal. You're immediately suspicious. There is a reputation with your customer base. I haven't seen a large reputation with, say, law enforcement. You do require laundering setups because you have a maximum deposit limit per week, per in-game week. So you'll need somewhere to like process all your cash. So those sort of larger ramifications, I guess. But compared to, say, Drug Dealer Simulator, which is intentionally a bit more of a simulated experience, this is like that really low-level, entry-level management, that like slice-of-life, cozy kind of setup, but within a drug dealing space. I think it's absolutely fun. I love it a long time. But by extension, I think we talked about this before. I like simulator games because they allow me to experience a job or a side of the world that I would never experience in my lifetime. Drug dealing is absolutely that. I would never be a drug dealer in my entire life. But the idea of doing it for a game, hilarious. So as I normally do, I was scrolling through Keymailer, having a look, and one popped up. I'm like, that is a job I would have loved to have when I was like a teenager or like, you know, younger. It's called Cinemaster Cinema Simulator. So I get to run, Max, my own cinema. It's called Pop Cinemas. You know, capitalization, like Pop C. So you get, so there's a selection of movies that you've got to buy the licenses for. You can then run them, but you don't want to run too many sessions. People won't get in. Then you've got to run a candy bar. You've got to also do all the little idiosyncrasies that would become with running a cinema on a much simpler level, obviously. Dear God, Max, has this tickled a part of my brain that I had not realized. I get the beauty of like supermarket simulator or like trading card store simulator in that I'm running the candy bar, gotta make sure I have all the popcorns and the drinks and the candy bars and all the things. But then I also get to pick what movies I play, and they have to pick what session times they're at, and like, do I, you know, skew them later in the day because it's like the movie benefit from a later time slot. That level of management is fucking blasphemy. And the beauty of this game compared to, say, other sort of, as I mentioned, like Supermarket Simulator, etc., because you have downtime between each screening, you're like, you've just got, you can stock up, you can customize, you can spend that time just tinkering what you're working on until you have enough, like, you know, screens running and sessions that you're like just constantly going. I'm not there yet, thankfully, which has given me a lot of time to like have some fun. It's set up in a mall and there are other shops that you can go to. As of yet, I can't engage with them, but I wish I could. But
is that like due to like a level restriction, or are they not in the game yet? Is it an early access thing?
Yeah, I don't know. So the game itself, I believe, is in full release. But yeah, like you can go in there, you can walk in. It's maybe something that will come later, in the same way that that laundromat simulator game I played. You can like unlock, you know, delivery across the road, and there's a little arcade. There's a printing factory. You know, there are things that add to the larger experience of the game. I've just not experienced them yet, if they are something that is available. But in what I have played and the movies that I can pick and the candy bar, like I'm having a fucking blast, which I knew exactly I would, hence why I asked for the review code. So yeah, quick touch on that. I'll probably have more to say because I'm feeling I'm going to keep coming back to it. I know we're like over an hour into the show. Assassin's Creed game did take up a bunch of time. But there is one more game I want to discuss before we jump into the news. Luckily, it's a quiet news week. And that is Midnight Murder Club. So Midnight Murder Club is a second party exclusive, with PlayStation, is also on PC. This was a game that presented itself in a showcase and state of play earlier in the year. The idea is it's essentially Spotlight Tiggy in a mansion with guns. It's a blast. So the idea is like you have your gun, a rifle, or a handgun, I should say, and a torch, and you just hunt each other down in this mansion. We were kindly provided a review code to the early access version. You've not been able to jump into it at all, Max?
I haven't been able to find... No, none of my
too many Assassin's Creeds.
Oh, well, it, that and trying to wrangle people to come and play, despite the fact that, like, Split Fiction, if one person owns it, anyone can all your friends can download a free version of the game and join your lobby and play with you. But
couldn't get them.
Everyone's got a life, apparently.
Bastards. But similar to Split Fiction, it is a game that I've been playing with my son, which is really bizarre. But
you've been enjoying shooting him in the dark?
Yeah, it's been really, really fun. So we've done it a couple different ways. We've played it here at my place, and we're playing with my mate Craig, and then we've also played at his house and to where I am here, as that he lives with his mum. As a gameplay experience, it's a really cool concept, in that the idea of running around a giant mansion in the dark with just a torch, and therefore it does add this sense of unease as you're moving around this mansion. And because it is quite expansive and there's doors everywhere, there's stairs, there's hallway, like, it's just constantly sending you in different directions, you can very quickly get lost in the space. Like, visual markers that you would normally look for aren't really there because you've got your torch. Most things are obscured. And because, like, most rooms have, like, multiple ways to enter them, I tried to sit down and actually draw out a map, and it got hard really quick because, you know, each, like, rooms are all different scales, all these different doors. I'm like, holy shit, how do I know where I am at any given time?
Well, how do you know if it's generally, procedurally generated as you're going through it?
I don't believe it is, but I can't say it isn't. Pardon me. Because there are some things that are still always in the same place, but, like, now that you think, now that I think about it, like, I remember that being somewhere else, but...
But, I mean, they could be anchor points. Like, that doesn't...
Absolutely true. Yeah, like, there's a cemetery, and that's always kind of in the same spot, but how they move it, you could be absolutely correct. And because there's that constant tension of not being able to see where you're going, know where you are, anytime you see a torchlight or you hear a noise, because in a similar vein to, what was that game on, Pete? Was it Contraband or whichever? Was it Contraband?
Maybe I'll tell you when you give me
It was that game where it's a space game, it was a four player, Lethal Company was the name I'm thinking of, where, you know, it's got proximity chat as well. So that's another fun part of the game, is as you're walking around, you'd be like, yo, and, like, lure people to you. And because we spend a lot of time playing with bots, because it's just my son and I want him to have, like, a fun time. The bots will also throw you, like, hello, or and, like, oh, shit. So it kind of adds a little bit of extra fun. In terms of the game itself, in this early access form, there are five modes which you can play. There is free-for-all, team deathmatch. It's essentially like trophy hunt, where the idea is that there is a skull piece. It is separated into three pieces, and there are three rounds, and there are small safes littered throughout the level at random, and at the end of each round, you can deposit your skull, whether it be a single piece, two piece, or a three piece, into a vault. But each of the saves, there are level 1, 2, and 3 safes. Many of them don't open up until that corresponding round. So, like, you might find fuck all number 1s, but you'll find a lot of 2s and even more 3s. So it kind of allows, like, if you're having a rough start at the front, you can really bum rush it. But even then, you can only hold one full completed skull at any given time. And it's all about dollar value. So that's a $4,000 value. Two pieces, $2,500. One piece is $1,000. And because you can only, like, really hold one at any given time, the most you're going to get, unless you're, like, drop it in the vault, run off to the safe, grab another one, throw it in the short amount of time the vaults are accessible.
Yeah.
There is... Oh, what was the other one? There is one that's kind of like a card-based mode. So the idea is that you go in, you select a couple of cards, you go in to play around, you come out, you select. It's kind of like that deck building-y sort of experience. So you kind of go in with different boons and different buffs, etc. To move to the next space. What was the other one?
That's called the wild cards mode.
Yeah, it's the wild cards mode. So yeah, So free-for-all, team deathmatch, essentially trophy hunt, wild card. What's the other one? Fuck. I don't know. But either way, I spent more time playing Team Deathmatch because obviously my son and I could team up. We'd have a lot of fun just taking out things. I hope there's more coming because the game is very bare bones. Like, there are the five modes. There are... Yeah,
there's Free-for-All, Thief in the Night, Team Deathmatch, and Headhunters.
Yes, Headhunters. Thief in the Night is the trophy hunt. Yeah, the other one, Headhunters, is the one that you were mentioning, but I forget what the rules were. Yeah, so they've got the five modes, and like, yeah, but you end up finding two that grab your attention. I think this game needs some more to it. You are randomly allocated playable characters in the game, but there, which is a positive, that there is no... There is nothing to differentiate yourself from any other character.
So there's no asshole running around as odd job because you can't shoot him?
No. No. Like, you're all the players, all the characters the same. The little trinkets you can get come from little... slot machines, and even then they're randomly allocated at the beginning of the match, and then you go to it and it'll be like, hey, this one has a bulletproof vest and a night vision potion, and you have that, and you can only really use it like the once, and then once it's been pulled, you can no longer pull it. I believe so anyway. I've never been able to go back, but service level really fun, has great potential. Like, the novelty alone is really cool. And you would hope that would be enough to pull people into it. But I'm not hearing anything about Midnight Murder Club. No one. Like, apart from us that are playing it, like, I'm not seeing it on my socials. I'm not seeing it in, like, you know, YouTube recommendations. I'm not, like, it's kind of nowhere. And it's kind of a bummer. As you mentioned, even with like one person has to buy it, free passes for everyone. But even then, the entry is really, really low. Disappointing. But for what it is, really enjoying it, having a great time. I think that's enough of the games we've been playing this week, Max, because Jesus Christ. So let's get in the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation.
Spoilers, not much. So I've titled this section The Little Big Screen. So Sony has made the decision to change its Horizon Zero Dawn adaptation from a TV show with Netflix to a movie. Talking to Variety, the PlayStation Productions lead Asad Quilzebash, love that name, said the TV project in collaboration with Netflix was, quote, not creatively going how we wanted it to, end quote. Now a Horizon Zero Dawn film will be made instead. Quizzlebash also said that as part of the interview that Sony is considering turning Astrobot into a feature film. Todd Howard of Bethesda was also part of the piece, and he and Quizzlebash agreed how you adapt a video game really matters. While Sony hasn't found success with the TV adaptation of Horizon Zero Dawn, Bethesda very much did with its Fallout series on Amazon. Quote, originally a lot of people were approaching to do a feature film, and looking at what we wanted to do for this one, that felt too compressed, said Howard. Fallout is such an amazing world, what would we really want to watch in it? What would like to watch the next story or new stories in that world, as opposed to, again, in this instance, adapting a story we had told and kind of compressing it down for a movie? For this one, we were very much interested in telling new stories, end quote.
So this is interesting, because like, I remember from when they originally did the big announce of like, hey, Amazon's getting God of War, you know, fucking Peacock is getting Twisted Metal, Netflix is getting Horizon, and it's a movie. And I remember like us at the time being like, that's cool and all, but like a series would be way better. Pardon me. And then Netflix dropped it. It went somewhere else. And they're like, it's a series now. I'm like, brilliant. Fantastic. What an absolute win. Now it's a movie again. I have a feeling they were like, this is really like this story needs to be spread. But then they realized the financial investment of all the CG for all them robots. And suddenly they're less inclined to want to spend as much cash.
You're going to Avatar it.
You reckon?
Maybe.
But like, Avatar's poos.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be a great movie, to be honest.
Yeah,
Yeah.
So yeah, like my only thought process on this is, yeah, they've clearly... They couldn't come to terms with the Netflix deal. Took it away. It has to be like... The story of Horizon isn't overly that complicated. End of the world, cool shit happens. Like, you play Lego... You play Lego Horizon Adventures, you see how easy it is to condense that story into a really simple delivery method. That's not... Sorry, the actual story which they're telling shouldn't be the issue. It has to be the financial burden of making big fuck-off robots. Which does then worry me about Amazon and God of War, of course.
Oh, mate, Amazon's got, like, empty, like, their pockets are just so deep.
You would think so.
That'd be fine.
Actually, hang on. Now, so I'm rereading over this now. It mentions Netflix. Went from a TV show with Netflix to a movie. But, like, didn't it change hands somewhere else before?
Yeah, it did, but it went back to Netflix. And then the creative director posted some, like, crazy shit on Twitter. And then he got dropped. And
that's right, yeah.
They got dropped. And, yeah.
That's all good, though. But, Max, you mentioned it a moment ago. Let's jump into that. So Sony could turn its excellent performing franchise Astrobot into a movie as well in the future, as PlayStation Productions lead Asad Quizzlebash, it is fun to say, has confirmed the company is, quote, absolutely, end quote, considering a film adaption. Expanding on the suggestion, Quizzlebash explained to Variety how Sony picked up on last year's PS5 entry, earning many awards and building up an audience of enthusiasts. Quote, those are very early indicators for us to want to try and grow the franchise and grow that IP. So we're constantly looking at it. And I would say it's not just sort of awards and nominations that drive that, he explained. Sometimes we have IP that's just got great stories that a creator really wants to adapt it. End quote. Astrobot's story is not its strong point. While the Astrobot titles do follow a very basic narrative, hey, the latest being to put back together a PS5 spaceship, the gameplay is very much the focus of the series. However, as the Super Mario Brothers movie demonstrated in 2023, you do not need to follow an in-depth story to achieve success. In terms of other projects, though, PlayStation Productions is also turning Days Gone, Ghost of Tsushima, Gravity Rush, and more into films, as well as the God of War TV show. Max.
It needs to be essentially Minions the movie, but
I was about to say the exact same thing. Like, that lack of communicative ability with the bots, like, they don't talk. They just kind of make wow la, 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 and noises one another, which is absolutely just the fucking Minions. I personally hate the Minions in every delivery. Now, a lot of that,
how dare you?
A lot of that is fueled by that window of time where all our aunts were using Minion memes on Facebook. And I got really mad at them because Minions had nothing to do with the bullshit memes they were making. And I'm like, this is the most white woman humor I've ever seen in my entire life. Can you fuck off? So I just immediately muted anyone on my feed that did it. And I still don't know what started it, and I hated it. But yeah, like Despicable Me, the movies are okay. I like Steven Carell as Groot. He was really fun. But the Minions suck. But would I watch an Astrobot movie? Fuck yes, I would. What would the narrative be? Probably just that. But in that same thought, Max, like, Ratchet and Clank got a movie and it kind of bombed. But, like, are we in a... Because, you know, we're in a post-Last of Us world. We're in a post-Fallout world. You know, like, can't, you know, it's past Super Mario Brothers movie world. Like, has the curse been broken?
I'm going to spoil some fucking quick bits. The Minecraft movie has shattered all expectations, breaking box office records with a staggering $301 million worldwide opening.
See, that to me is insane because that movie looks like absolute slop.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad we're in agreement.
I'm still going to go see it because my son will... Actually, no, he's seeing it with school holiday programs, so I don't have to see it. Saying that, though, I might get, like, you know, a little inebriated and go see it for funsies.
I'm going to skip ahead and leave the Tony
Actually,
Hawk.
Before we jump into that, like, Max, so outside of it needing to be a Minions movie, would obviously Hadley would love it. Love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you think there's a success in it? Is Astrobot marketable enough?
No, so I don't think it needs to be a movie. It needs to be 7-minute Bluey episodes.
Fuck! That is brilliant! That's the answer.
That's what it needs to be.
Holy shit. That's the answer.
And in 7 minutes, you can go rescue one of your Astrobot bros. You can do a little PlayStation cameo.
Yeah, each episode is like the...
Yep. That's it.
Oh! You know, remember like back in the day with like all the Pixar movies, how they would like have those like little short animated shorts at the start? Maybe that's that. Like any Sony movie that gets released, like there's a little Astrobot sprinkle at the start. Astrobot's Many Adventures. Try and entice people to go to the cinemas, I suppose. Release them on YouTube a little later down the line. Or on like, what's Sony, the Sony Pictures Core or whatever. That's on your console. Yep. Or you throw it on to like, was it? What's the one that Sony own a stake in? Hulu. But Hulu's been butchered to shit in the streaming wars, so it's unlikely. But no, I think you nailed it. It has to be. It can't be anything else. There is no reason it should be. Oh, damn it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna skip ahead and talk about some Microsoft news for a hot second, purely because I have played and experienced this. So Microsoft will literally do anything to not make a game themselves. So, Microsoft has made an atrocious AI-powered version of Quake 2 available to the public. This version of id Software's late 90s classic is unplayable. Well, it's playable, but it's not Don't really. It.
Yeah.
The demo is so bad, it's a surprise that it's showcased at all. Quote, this bite-sized demo pulls you into an interactive space inspired by Quake 2, where AI crafts immersive visuals and responsive actions on the fly, end quote. That's the official blurb from Xbox. Quote, it's a groundbreaking glimpse at a brand new way of interacting with games, turning cutting-edge research into quick and compelling playable demo, end quote. How's it work? Well, basically, it's using machine learning to translate player inputs into the images you see on your screen, vaguely resulting in a poor impersonation of one of the snappiest shooters ever made. Effectively, the demo has been trained on thousands and thousands of hours of Quake 2 gameplay footage, and it then tries to reproduce that within less than a minute of play. I played it for about 5 minutes, because it's generative frames. If there's an enemy in front of you, if you quickly look left and right, that enemy disappears. You fucking despawn him. Because it tries to generate the frames that you're looking at as you're looking at them. So if you take a quick step backwards and just fucking look up and then back, everything's gone and the whole thing shifts. The game itself is running at about five frames per second in the resolution of a YouTube thumbnail on your screen.
Not a good YouTube thumbnail.
No. Whew, that would be...
Yeah, this ain't no 1080p, bitch. This is like old school thumbnail. This is like thumbnail on like an old Nokia, you know?
It is a hot mess. I played it for like 5 minutes just to like see what the hubbub was, and I cannot believe they're letting people play this.
I do love your idea that they'll do anything to not make a game themselves. That's pretty funny. What is most intriguing, and I did think a lot of people picked up on this over the week, was that this was being sort of shared across socials by the likes of Jeff Keighley, which is astounding to me. As someone who should be a big advocate for the games industry and also tries to promote themselves as such, to show something that is what many people are currently fighting about, and the idea of generative AI as an issue, but then also putting it in a delivery like this, you know, yes, it shows that generative AI is not brilliant and that it's going to take a long time to get to completely building a game in AI, but it shows it's possible. And that's not information that should be shared. Because in the same way that when generative AI first slipped in hot, it was all like people with too many fingers or whatever. Or like when you watch those early videos of Will Smith eating to where those videos are now, you're like, that's confronting. So like the future of games is a choice.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's like shit. But look, then again, it's probably, even on an AI generated engine, I'm, you know, granted it's part of Bethesda, but it's machine, you know, it's id Soft, so id Soft are pretty good, but it's very likely that even this version runs better than the Bethesda creative engine for most things. So I'm so, oh, that Oblivion remake's getting rumbles again, and I really, really
yeah, the latest, it's in the, I didn't write in the quick bits, but the rumor mill is it's going to
shadow drop like this month or something.
It right after the Ezo anniversary.
Well, that's today. They're 11 years today for ESO. I did see it on the socials.
So there's an event. There's an event running.
I fell deep in love with Elder Scrolls Online. What a game.
Yeah, so it's their anniversary jubilee.
Yeah.
At the moment. Oh, it's a free play event too. Look at that. So when that wraps up, apparently that's when it's going to hit. That is the rumors.
Nice. All right, so give me one sec. I've just pulled up.
You'd play it. You'd play fucking Quake 2 via Copilot.
No.
Do it. I would love to get your reaction on it.
Oh, I will play it at some point on this very second. Interesting. Okay. Cool. All right. Next piece of news. Now, I just wanted to clarify something before I stepped into this one. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4, Max. Remember how it was like a rumor, then it became real, and we were really excited about it. But Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 Plus 4 is shaping up to be a largely nostalgic trip down memory lane, with a few exceptions. The fourth entry won't feature free roam, which is something we've mentioned before, which is certainly a blow. Another is predictably controversial decision to remove or change classic tunes from its soundtrack. And this includes the removal of Alien Ant Farm with their song Wish, which I fucking love, Iron Maiden, and AFI. Activision recently released information around the soundtrack in a set of two stages, and fans quickly noted a few glaring omissions. And of course, this is thanks to VGC. And while the knee-jerk reaction might be to blame the publisher, it seems the decision to remix the tracklist was down to Mr. Tony Hawk himself. On Instagram, Tony wrote the following, quote, "It was my choice to pick some different songs by the same artist featured in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 Plus 4 original soundtrack. I'm having that discovery is half the fun and a big reason that these soundtracks resonated in the first place. So listen and enjoy the ride. More to come, both old and new," end quote. Another wave of songs is yet to be released. We're expecting a third. So we'll withhold any additional pitchforks until we have the complete track list. The skateboard legend has seemingly been very hands-on with the upcoming remastered collection, and apparently the pro skater put his foot down, demanding that Activision do whatever was necessary to ensure that troubled Jackass member and Jackass and CKY member Bam Margera to be included in the game. Now, to touch upon that, Bam Margera's had a very interesting last probably like 10 years. It's not been very good for him. Since the loss of Ryan Dunn, his life has drastically declined with a lot of sort of alcohol and drug abuse. He has been on and off clean. He's been clean this time for quite a window, and is actively, you know, back in the skateboarding scene, and has like lost a lot of weight, and he's looking really good. So to have him included in the game is absolutely a big win, and it's a great sign for him to come back. And as someone who was a hero of mine in my teen years, to see him ideally be on the better side, there are a lot of things that make me question like why he was ever a hero of mine, or and why he hasn't changed in a lot of ways in that time. But to have like his brother's band, you know, Jess Margera in the band CKY with Return of 96, Quite Bitter Beings for this is a big win. That is a staple song for Tony Hawk's at large. I think it's a cool addition. I do believe that Wish by Alien Ant Farm should be on there. However, for those playing at home, Alien Ant Farm and CKY did do a tour earlier this year, where it was kind of changed midway through because the singer for CKY, Chad I. Ginsburg, straight up punched the singer for Alien Ant Farm in the face in Europe, and they cancelled they kicked him off the tour and swapped it in with Drowning Pool. So maybe it's a circumstance of CKY are on here, you don't get Alien Ant Farm, or vice versa. But I know that, like, I remember this from years ago, Max. Probably, I think it was certainly after 1 and 2 that I remember Jess Margera did make a comment about, oh, we're doing something for, you know, we're in talks for an upcoming Tony Hawk's game. It led rumors to the 3 and 4. I do agree with Tony Hawk on the idea is that Tony Hawk is great for music discoverability in the same, like, there's a lot of bands like Alien Ant Farm outside of Smooth Criminal, you know, that I heard here. Even Motorhead, Ace of Spades, I'd never heard that until I played Tony Hawk. That band, Goldfinger, there's a bunch of bands I'd never listened to if it wasn't for Tony Hawk. And the same rock band did the same for me as well. So I hope there's more to come.
I grew up in a house where my dad was in a band, so I listened to a lot of that music because that's what they used to play.
Oh, perfect. So like, so then in that case, where do you sit with this? Because like for me, the soundtrack of Tony Hawk is by far the most nostalgic part of it.
Look, yeah, no, for sure it is. It is a shame that some of those tracks will be omitted, but hopefully I initially just went, it would probably cost a fortune to get those fucking licenses back. They're just swapping it for something different, and that's fine. Whatever. I'll just fucking mute the game and play my Spotify.
play that 8D song and just on repeat.
No, I'll just play the original soundtrack and just like fuck it, do my own thing. But that's fine.
But yeah, look, it makes sense in terms of like.
I'm more happy the fucking game's coming back out.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd much rather play 3 and 4 and, you know, then, as you said, play the soundtrack that I want. But I also love that Tony Hawk is keeping true to the values of the original game, right? He's like, I want there to be some new songs, some old songs, in the same way that they are actively putting new skaters into the game to be like, these are the skate, like, you know, those of you that were, you know, skating fans back in the day, you know who I am, you know who Bam is, you know who Bucky Lasek, Bob Burnquist, Chad Musker, Rodney Mullen, you know, like all these names, you know who they are. But we don't, a lot of us are old. We don't either skate anymore or we can't fucking do it. So like these are the people you should be paying attention to. And I love that. I absolutely love that as a concept. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Quick bits. Yeah, as I alluded to before, Minecraft movie smashing at $301 million worldwide opening. Bungie has announced that it is lifting its lid on its next multiplayer title, Marathon, later this week on Saturday.
Yeah, there's been some interesting like ARG shit across socials.
They have taken over Sony's social platform, social media.
And we have seen that like local people have been sent mysterious packages. Not us, of course, but like Shannon Grixey over at Press Start. He's got himself a suspicious looking Marathon box.
I am my own suspicious package. I don't know.
Hot.
Yeah, thanks. And Final Fantasy IX celebrates its 25-year anniversary with, quote, various projects, end quote, to come. There has been rumblings of a remake for the longest time. There was rumblings of a fucking animated TV show for the longest time. Do you know what this is going to be? Merch.
Merch, you can't get in Australia.
It'll be real sad.
Or like a fucking concert or an art book or something lame.
Yeah.
Saying that though, look, you're absolutely correct. Like, so this is something that I keep forgetting about, and then I feel like I should go re-look at it.
And then I think back, I'm like, I played this as a kid, and it's 25, and then I'm like, fuck, I'm old.
Yeah.
I'm 25 years old.
So if we go back a couple years, the NVIDIA leaks, Max.
Yep.
Those NVIDIA leaks, bang the fuck on. What we're learning, bang on. And they did mention a Final Fantasy IX remake. So the question is, was that originally intended to drop now as part, you know, not this very second, but like as part of their 25th anniversary? And it's just not ready. It's just not working.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it would make sense for their 30th because then they'll be finished with Final Fantasy VII by then.
Yeah, you assume so. But then why would that be in like the leaks so, you know, long ago.
Oh, who knows?
It's a long time. Man, we've been on for a fucking long ass time. Let's get out of here. Let's start wrapping this bad boy up. So let's get into the games that are coming this week, because unlike Final Fantasy VII, at least these are in the foreseeable future. On the 8th of April, Ixion for PS5 and Commandos Origins PS5, which is good to know because I'd hate that to not be the Origins of Commandos. 9th of April, All in Abyss, Judge the Fake PS5. On the 10th of April, we get Blueprints PS5, Harper Gun PSVR 2, Monaco 2 PS5, Monster Energy Supercross 25 PS5, Pocket Bravery PS5, Promise Mascot Agency PS5/PS4, The Talos Principle Reawakened on PS5, and then finally on the 11th of April, Big Buck Hunter Ultimate Trophy.
You didn't even mention that you've been playing VR with your fancy fucking
glasses. Oh, yeah, I did think of that just then, like a second ago, but we're at an hour and 44. I'll fuck around with it more and I'll talk about it next week. In short, I bought lenses for the VR. They slip on really easy. It's great. It makes a much more comfortable experience, but you really have to like sit it exactly in the key spot. Otherwise, it's a mess. All right, Max. Hey, Josh La Rosa. Now, for those playing at home, Josh was the individual I mentioned a couple of weeks ago who ballsy messaged me on Twitter, and we are actively looking at organizing an episode of More The Players together, and that should be a stack of fun. But yeah, welcome, brother. Welcome to have you. But yeah, I'll talk more about my Hans VR experience next week, mostly because it's been an hour and 45 minutes. You need to leave for work very soon.
About an hour.
And I want to go to bed because I'm old.
I really need to take a piss as well.
Yeah, I also have to go to the bathroom again. I got to do wee's. So let's get out of here.
All right, everybody. You know the drill. This PlayStation Conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials. They are Discord, Instagram, Twitter, X. There's one more. Facebook. Yep. All those links can be found in the description below.
And we also have Blue Sky, but like I've not logged on to Blue Sky.
I also have a blue ski. I also now have an Instagram because I got sick of my mom sending me fucking Instagram links that I couldn't look at because I don't have Instagram.
Yeah. It's the same reason that For The Players has a TikTok account now, because they have people that send me TikToks, including you, and it's like, you should have an account. I'm like, I don't want to have a fucking account.
Although, to be fair, I tend to not send TikToks unless I can save the video and just send the video to that person so I don't have to download the fucking app.
Yeah.
Because I respect people's not wanting TikTok.
I appreciate it. Thank you. But yes, there are some good TikToks out there, which makes me sad. But like, we want to do some TikTok stuff at some point because it's kind of where the industry is going.
I mean, I was just going through the other day and then bam, and your dad's in my face.
Yeah, so my dad's a celebrant. He's like, I'm going to start doing TikToks. I'm like, what? He's done a little podcast as well. Like, it's just funny. You know, all these years after, like, my dad being like, can you stop doing fucking podcasts in my kitchen? Like, I'm trying to do shit on a Tuesday night. And I'm like, cool. And then, like, you know, all these years later, he's like, hey, you know all those times you did podcasts in my house? Can you tell me how to do it?
His podcast is way more popular than ours.
Oh, absolutely. Like, immediately. But yes, of course, big thank you, everyone, for joining us once again, whether it be from the beginning of the show or jumping at the last minute if you are watching us live on Twitch, or taking a little bit of part of your week just to listen to us. We really, really appreciate it. Time is the
absolute shit for an hour and a half.
Absolutely. Like, you know, time is one of the most finite things we have. So you've chosen to spend some of it with us. That's a whole lot of impressive and just absolutely massive. So big thank you. My Ritalin is wearing out. I need to get out of here. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For The Players.